So this evening we will have three lectures. Point so you have to be patient. I will, because I prepared this lecture before, and so probably I will repeat something that has been already said yesterday by Rolf Hoyer in the phone call. I will go, in this case, a little bit faster, and but I think that it's useful because, remember, yesterday we tried to have an impression of what is, in general, a collider, what are the problems, in very generically, and also what was the difference in between the two competing technologies that were considered. So I will start this lecture with something that has been already partially said yesterday, that is how the process of the decision to go to the cold technology was done. I think it's useful because this in my opinion, is useful to repeat the key point, the weak and the strong point in the two technologies. So this is just something that, you know, is just politics, sorry for that, but just to explain that the history is long. You have these big bodies that include all the particle physicists all over the world, and after you have this international committee for the collider that was created years ago, and after you have created more recently, in 2002, you have this steering committee, International Linear Collider Steering Committee, that was created really to go fast in, to a solution. So here you see that you have people from Beijing, from here, and from all the other parts of the world in this steering committee, and since February 2002, they really tried to go in the direction to make a decision. The case was clear, that has been repeated many times, and so the point was to go. And the biggest step they did is to try to create a group of wise persons. So they're trying to find really people around the world in the three different regions, four regions and so on. And well, here you see that the Asia, it was really represented by Japan. So this is historical, I know. I don't know why, but three are from Japan and one was from Korea. Europe is more balanced because you have France, Italy, Great Britain, and Germany. And U.S. America is U.S. Okay, so that is okay. But in any case, is apart from this one that is considered U.S., but is a former guy that was at DESI. But nevertheless, they had the mission to define, on the basis of all the documents that I already shown, comparing the technology, trying to study and say, you have to go ahead with one technology. And they did this much faster than expected. And at the end, in the middle of August last year, they took a decision. So now this is a group of people, and this one that was chairing the group is the guy that is now also the director of the project. So just to, so you have the picture of this. And this is a smiling guy because we are here in Korea at the end of the last meeting that just before that once the decision was taken. The decision actor was announced publicly here in Beijing in a conference last year in the 20th of August of last year. So they did a very great work because really they studied and they did the 50% of their time, spent it for 8 months, to really study all the details. And they really did a great job. I had the opportunity to follow all this job because what they decided at the beginning is to have for each of the three competitors, I said two But in practice we are three, because there was one Japanese version and one American version of the same collider. So they decide to be very open, to have one representative of each technology participating to all the work, all the process of the decision. Not clearly the closed section, but all the process. And was a pleasure to me being the representative of the cold technology. That means to reply to all the questions. So now, this was said many times, I said already why the ITRP, the case exists. And what is important is that all the community of energy physics was a very clear, I stole these transparencies from the one that has been presented to the ICFA in the 19th of August by Barry Belge. So that is official, okay? So the point is that it's necessary to make a choice now, because we need the collider soon, and to go ahead with the R&D in two directions is too expensive. The community cannot support this. So we have to make a choice, even if both technologies are good. And it's very important to have the superposition of the two. The recommendation from ICFA to the panel were not so very clear, so they had to interpret this curve. Because in one side they said you should recommend a technology. And in the other part they said, well, we have two possible, Tesla and the combination of JLC, and you have to choose one of the two. What they did is, no, we'll choose a technology. The final machine will be decided later on, because once the technology is chosen, all the group of people should work together to refine the final design. So what we have now at present is a technology choice, a reference design produced by the Tesla collaboration that was called Tesla. But what must be done in the next couple of years is to review this design and maybe modify many things. Okay? That was very clear. So they make a number of points. That is why yesterday I tried to make point in something. So it's important that the machine is good for the specified parameters. That means 500 GV with the possibility of upgrade to 1 TV, with a luminosity reach of one inverse aptobar in 3 years after a few years. So it's important that all the technical issues are clear. It's important that the cost is clear. It's important that the schedule is feasible. It's also important that the operation of the machine is conceivable, but it's also important that this technology must be appealing for something else. So this is, I think, that's one that is at the end. I think that has been one of the major reasons why they decide cold, because of the technology importance. Now they say, well, finally, we decide to base on the superconducting technology. And you have here, okay, this is just politics, but here you have a reason, and we come back in what we said yesterday. The main reason is because of the low frequency of the superconducting technology, the cavity is very large. So the beam is much less perturbed with respect to the other one. All the tolerances to align, we will see later in the last lecture on the physics, the alignment will be easy. Everything will be easy. So the probability of reaching the specification from the point of view of the machining should be easier, given that the two technologies exist. The other important point that has been pushed by physicists is that you remember, in the case of Tesla, you have the bunches, you have pulses of 1 millisecond, very long. And in this, you have many bunches. Okay, 2,000, 3,000, 2,800 bunches. Okay, but the space between bunches is very large. It's 337 nanoseconds. So you can imagine that in your experiment, each bunch is independent. You can do triggering and so on in this time. So you can distinguish nicely the events from one to the other. In the case of NLC, JLC, because the technology asks for very short pulses, 300 nanosecond pulse every 120 Hz. So you have to fill many bunches in a very short time. So the distance between the bunches, between the event, is as short as 1.4 nanoseconds. So the peeling up of events, it's practically sure. So what you are measuring is a mixture of few events. And the reconstruction is more difficult. So that's it's another critical point. At that point, okay, say, well, apart from the technology itself, the LINAC, we have seen yesterday, so the superconducting RF, we will see today deeper, and the traveling wave structure. Apart from the LINAC itself, all the ancillaries, CLIs, RF sources, Klystron, waveguides, and so on, in the case of this technology, are straightforward, are something that you more or less find already in the market. So you have less risk in this sense. And another point is that they even consider this 2-point. So because of the XFEL, you had a lot of work done in industrialization. You had a lot of work done in this. And the final point is the efficiency. We have seen already this. We will see again. So the finally, the luminosity is given, is proportional to the beam power. If your system is producing more beam power with less plug power, it's an advance. Well, now, just to conclude, it's just to say, well, it's just, again, repeating stuff that you can read here that has been said yesterday. So, in any case, all the group did a great work, so at the end, the machine must be done together. And again, repeating again, that the machine must be done together, must be done as a common effort. But the technology choice is called. Now, it's very interesting to look at this one. That is just for history, you will have the transparencies. But the day after, here in Beijing, the 20th of August, when it's been announced, it's fun, like this, I put this is a press... It's a press release given here, and it's nice because these three people, I am just quoting this, you have press release also from Wagner, from Chen, and from this one, but this is in a certain sense obvious. But these three guys, the director of CERN, the director of KK, and the director of SLAC, that we are against the cold technology, for different reasons, okay, they, at the end, they say, yes. It's very important to have the technology done. So let's finish in this part. Now, technology choice done. Now we are moving. This was just, to have a frame. And I think it's also important the fact that this decision has been really taken very seriously by the other lab directors. And you have a declaration that's very strong. Now, we are speaking about the RF technology. Now, the winner is ERF technology. What is ERF technology? Now, I spend this second part of the lecture. This is just to try to explain a little bit what is ERF technology. This first part will be, this first lecture, will be dedicated just to give an idea of the ERF technology from the superconducting retina, from the point of view of the core element, that is the superconducting cavity, the object that is used to transfer the energy to the beam. Remember, to give the energy to the beam, we have seen, we need a volume in which the beam can see an electric field in the direction of the motion, the beam can integrate this field as v, as velocity in dt, to gain energy. Okay, so this object that is the core of the accelerator in this case is a standing wave object and is a superconducting object. Okay, so now we are speaking about superconductivity and this object. In the next lecture, we will speak about all the technology around and the now superconductivity. So the fact that this has been superconductivity RF has been developed since the 70s because the technology difficult, but was we have already seen that was appealing to have something with very low losses. So at the beginning, this technology was so difficult that the prototypes done were really poor in terms of performances. The biggest step in this technology has been done because of two big projects. Because two big projects, one in U.S. at the Jefferson Lab creating a machine that is SIBA using hundreds of cavities, 300 of cavities, and the other one at CERN for lab 2. So this effort of two big labs to put effort in this technology was the step through the creation of the technology. The other point is that because of this big effort, all the R&D was much more supported, and you start to have really understanding of the technology. And this was a certain level of the technology, we will see. The further step has been, again, with a lot bigger effort, the Tesla collaboration that had the dream to push this technology to a level to be considered for a TV collider. And these are two main achievements. Accelerating field of 35 megavolt per meter. That means every meter, every cavity, you gain 35 MeV. That is consistent with the length of the linear. That means that each linear, to reach a 250 GV, it's altogether, including the lost space, it's of the order of 15 kilometers. It's not 100 kilometers. Okay? And the fact that the quality factor that we have seen is a number that gives how much power you need is very high. So, but again, what is important is that is the technology step has been created in three steps, different steps, because of big project. So the problem of this technology at the beginning was just the fact that it was too much difficult, too much expensive to be developed at the level of a small laboratory, at the level of a university. Now, I cannot go into detail about superconductivity. I want just to give you an idea, and I use in this very full transparency. So, in a normal conducting stuff, with a variable field, RF field, this is a surface, you have a so-called skin effect. So the field is confined, because the conductor is not perfect, is confined not on the surface, but on a thin layer close to the surface. And according to this formula, that in which sigma is a conductivity of the material, or this formula, you have that the surface resistance that we have seen is a key factor to determine how much power you are expanding here. Here, this formula is valid for everybody. So the power losses are proportional to the surface resistance, and after you have to integrate the magnetic field all over the surface. That as high is the field with the square, as high is the power, but your coefficient in front is the surface resistance. So this one is given by this formula, well known, that is inversely proportional to the conductivity and to this skin depth that finally, if you look at this formula here, it's inversely proportional to the frequency. So as high as the frequency, is lower is the skin depth, as less are the dissipation. So finally, you have in the normal conducting case, so you want to have a very good conductor to have this small, and a very good conductor, and you want to have also, you prefer lower frequency, but you know, in a combined way here, because otherwise you have too much volume and so on. So in any case, this is what you have. So it's very simple. In the case of superconductivity, the behavior is completely different. Not completely in the sense that you have always on the surface here a magnetic field and you have a current. Like here, you have a magnetic field and you have a current. This current on the surface, that is a current, that is a boundary condition to generate the electromagnetic field in the cavity, is a dissipating power here, because you have all the electrons that are carrying the current that are producing this resistance. In the superconducting case, what happens with superconductivity, can see here, that is just a sketch, but below a certain temperature that is called the critical temperature, that is different in different superconductors, and in the case of niobium is a little bit more than 9 Kelvin, the electrons start to couple in a Cooper pair, like sketch here, and coupling two electrons together with the spin in the opposite direction, they are really bonded together and they are behaving like bosons. They are really strange superparticles that still are remaining charged, but from the point of view of the movement inside the material, they are completely decoupled by all the rest. So they are moving in a fully freedom situation. So they are not dissipating any power. They don't have any interference with the other electrons. They are not any interference with the ions. They are very large with respect to the atom, and they are moving freely in this London penetration depth that is much smaller than the skin depth, but at the same minimum, in a skin that is very thin with respect to the surface, you have this superparticle that can carry the current without any dissipation. Okay? That is very good in the case of the continuous current on the DC magnet, because it's enough to have a few of these copper pairs that they can carry all the current. And carrying all the current, they are not producing, because they are not producing any dissipation, they are not producing any resistance, they are not producing any voltage drop, so you have no dissipation. In the case of an electromagnetic field, you have a problem, because from the temperature equal zero to the temperature equal to the critical temperature, you move from a state in which all the electrons are coupled in copper pair to the state in which all the electrons are not coupled in Cooper pair. And you have this formula that is given from a Boltzmann statistic, that is mainly saying how many electrons, depending on the temperature, are coupled and how many electrons are, on average, not coupled. So at any temperature, you have a fraction of the electron coupled in Cooper pair and a fraction of the electron not coupled in Cooper pair. And because of this statistic, means that here you have all, and here you have all in the opposite direction. Here in the middle, as close you go to the zero temperature, as many copper pair you have, as far as you go close to the critical temperature, as less they are coupled. The problem is not how many couple prayer you have, because they can carry the current. They are superparticles. The problem are the other electrons. In the skin, in the London penetration depth, you have both the superparticles and the normal electrons. You have the field. So even if the normal electrons are not really carrying current because they are too poor, they are behaving like this. So, but in any case, because you have the field here, they are moving. So they are producing nothing good, but they are dissipating energy. Okay? You cannot avoid. In a DC current, you don't have a field because the Cooper pairs are carrying all the current. At that point, the electrons that are not coupled don't see anything. But in this case, in the region of the London penetration depth, the field exists. And so also the uncoupled electrons are seeing this field. And so they are dissipating. So you have a surface resistance that is valid just in this region, surely, in the region of superconductivity. As a way, you have to add a term that is a normal conducting one. You have to move to the other one. That here gives the fact that it's proportional to the square of omega. So you want a low frequency. High frequency are very penalizing this. As low is the temperature, as lower is the surface resistance. And here is the term from the Boltzmann statistics that is given, that is just tuning the system according to how many normal conducting electrons are still surviving. Okay? Just to understand. So finally you have the surface resistance that is very small, we will see, but remember here that finally the Q0 is very high in this case because is a geometric factor, that is the energy stored divided by the power in consumed in a radiant, is a geometrical factor. We've already seen this one. Now, well, here is a plot. So you said surface resistance. In the formula before, I said that the surface resistance is a certain value. This value is a so-called BCS value. BCS is the name of the three guys who invented the superconductivity. Okay? So if I look here, I have this formula that give me the value, the theoretical value I have for the surface resistance. If I do a measurement, I see that unfortunately I have this behavior, okay, if I'm going down in temperature, but at a certain level, I'm not able usually to follow anymore this because my material is not perfect. You see here, I remember that I show you again this one. You have such a big gain from normal conductivity and superconductivity. See, are two examples, are two different temperatures, okay, 2 Kelvin and 4 Kelvin, are so big that if you have a minor particle or normal conductor, Dr. Nakti, in the cavity, everything is going down. Okay. So that is why, in a certain sense, this limit that is called residual resistance, that is stopping the going to zero of this curve, is giving a feeling of how pure is your niobium, how good is the level of handling this difficult technology. So, in the previous year, at the beginning, the problem was not that the physics was not respected. The problem was that the residual resistance due to the bad niobium was so high that the advantage was reduced. So, the big problem is and is still to reduce the residual resistance to a level. I want to show here, this is 1 over T, is difficult to, maybe it was better to plot, but considering that is about 9 Kelvin, the let me say 10, the critical temperature. So is 2 Kelvin is about here. Okay, it's about here. So the point is that if you are going to a lower temperature, in principle you continue to gain, but you are not in this case, in this example, with this residual resistance that was a test. You can plot any of this curve, and this is for a certain temperature, okay? So if you're going lower in temperature, you don't gain any more because you are stopped by a surface resistance, by the quality of your niobium. Now here I give you 2 more examples here, in which I come back to the same formula, written just in a different way. I mean, different way is just here. You know, you have a coefficient here is proportional to the square of omega divided by t, and after you have this Boltzmann terms. And you see here, I want to show this curve, in which, for example, you see that another example of surface resistance, this I've taken for the superconductivity book of Hasan Padamsi, that if you want to go deeper, it's the best one to see. And you see here, for example, 2 examples of 2 different temperatures in which the curve is plotted just in a different way, because it's plotted with the temperature here. But you see that you change the temperature, you can go in with 2 different curves, but after here you have a surface resistance, a residual resistance that is independent of the other parameters. So it's a stopping point you have. As low is, as better you can have. So the fact that we reach, I said, we are cavities reaching 10 to the 10 in Q, in practice means the Tesla collaboration did a big step in controlling and having low the residual resistance. All the rest is purely physics. Okay. So here, I mean, this one is not related to the superconductivity. You have still many things that are not perfectly understood, and that's because if you have problem that is related to the impurity you have, and considering that that are producing some defect in the simple physics, it's very difficult to make physics. You have many effects that we cannot look, like grain boundaries, defect in the grain boundary, and so on and so forth. So in practice this is typical, and as closer you are going to close to one, as better it is. This is an example of picture taken by normal material in the beginning. When the superconductivity started, that was typical example of what was on the surface of the cavity. So you can imagine, and that is typical, if you take any sheet of copper, for example, and if you look with a microscope, or if you look in any, at the beginning you don't see anything. But because of the process of the lamination, because of all this process you are doing, any particle, any dust that you have in the rollers is included in the material. So with a situation like this, it's very difficult to imagine to have a good surface resistance. I want here to show other few physical limits that you have in this technology, in this problem. This is the magnetic field. So in principle we said the system can carry all possible currents. Like, but also in the superconducting magnet, where you have DC current, you have another mechanism that can break the Cooper pairs. It's not just the mechanism that is a temperature related. As close as high is the temperature, as much Cooper pair are broken in normal electrons. You have also the magnetic field effect. So the field is producing magnetic field, because we have seen we have H and we have current. So the current is seeing the magnetic field that is creating this current. If the magnetic field reaches a certain level that is temperature dependent, okay, So this is at a critical temperature is zero, and is going to a maximum as low is the temperature. Above a certain limit of the magnetic field, the copper pair breaks. So you have a limit of the magnetic field. So you cannot sustain any field you want. And because of this behavior, that this is experimental data and this is a theoretical one, for different material, and you see that niobium is a better one, with respect to other superconductors like niobium-13, that was considered very good because has a higher critical temperature, or lead that is cheaper, okay? The maximum magnetic field that you can sustain before breaking the superconductivity, if you break the superconductivity, you have the phenomena that is called the quench, so the cavity is suddenly becoming normal conducting. And at that point, the dissipation is jumping by 5 orders of magnitude, 6 orders of magnitude. In practice, you don't have the power to dissipate because your RF source has been done just to give the power for a low losses cavity. So what happens is that your field is dropping down because you don't have the power. Okay. So the point is you have a limit in the field that is about 180 millitesla, or here is Gauss, so it's just multiplied by 10 respect to millitesla. Okay. Above this limit, the superconductivity is broken. So you have the advantage to stay at low temperature, about 2 degrees. You can multiply by around 9 and you have the temperature, so about here, to have the maximum possible. But in any case, you have a limit. And this is the limiting field in the cavity. Because remember, in a cavity or in an electromagnetic way, in a volume where you have an electromagnetic way, all the parameters are connected together. If you have an electric field, you have also a magnetic field. So if you want to have the electric field on the axis as high as possible, you have to increase in the same time also the magnetic field. And so at a certain point, your maximum gradient is determined by the fact that at a certain point, increasing the field, the accelerating field, you are reaching this limit and the cavity is quenching. So nothing, it's not producing any damage. It's not like a spark in a normal conducting cavity. It's just that the cavity is no more sustaining the field because its dissipation intrinsically is moving order of magnitude higher. Okay? But you lose the superconductivity of this cavity. Again, few seconds, the cavity is cooled down again, and you can, at a lower field, start again. It's not a problem. But it's a problem, you lose the field. Okay? You have two other problems that I want to address. One is due to the Mesmer effect, that is something that, you know, if you do superconductivity. So the superconductivity is trapping, if you cool down something that is exposed to a certain magnetic field, the magnetic field, once the Cooper pairs are produced, because the Cooper pairs are charging, carrying the current without any dissipation, they are sustained in the magnetic field they are seeing. Forever, in principle, because they are not dissipating. So, if when you are going through the critical temperature, you have a magnetic field on the cavity, this magnetic field is trapped. So what happens is that you see also, this is a picture with the microscope of putting a little iron powder, and you see vortexes that are just created in the material to sustain the previous magnetic field. And they are disturbing the conductivity. They are reducing, they are improving, they're increasing the residual resistance. So in the superconducting RF, it's very important to shield all the magnetic field, including the Earth magnetic field, before the cooling down, because otherwise you lose a part of the gain because of this effect. The other last point is, remember that here you have the field, the in part of the cavity. Here you have, for example, the helium to cool down. So, besides the field, because you have a finite thermal conductivity in the material, in any case, some heat is... So you have a delta T. So, besides the field, you have also a certain loss in the real temperature you have here. That is, besides the field, the temperature you have in this surface, and remember that the resistance is strongly proportional to the temperature, change because of this. And after you have also this small effect, that is, they call Kapitza resistance, that is a resistance. So now I'm going some, just to relax you a little bit now, I'm going a little history. So, you see the history is starting very, very early, in the 70s. Here is a logarithmic plot giving the total voltage installed in superconducting cavity. So it looks nice, but in practice was few samples. Very for electrons and for ions. So, the biggest step to has been for electrons in this region, in which you have a lot of stuff. So, this is the two first example of cavities produced for accelerators, for electrons and for ions. Very strange, okay? Object in which you are making standing a certain electric field, electromagnetic field. So this, both were working very badly, for different reasons. This one, because the shape was done in a certain way that was affected by the so-called multipacking we will see very, very soon. And because you are not allowed to make holes like this, because making holes means make welding means to put a lot of dust. So at the end, all this modification we are producing from. And here, because this system, we are a lot of ringing and so on. So we have already seen this, so I can go faster. So the limiting problem were material properties, so purity of niobium, the problem of the residual resistor ratios, that is low thermal conductivity of the niobium, the inclusion, we have seen the inclusion, the poor cleanness of the cavity. The cavity was not really cleaned, so at the end you had a lot of field emission. Microphonics. If you have a very high Q, you have a very narrow band. So any vibration of the cavity, even that you don't see in a normal cavity, is producing the tuning of the cavity. The cavity is going out of the band. So multipacking that we will see now, that is a resonant behavior of the electron, quench that we have already seen. If you have a transition from normal conductivity to superconductivity to normal conductivity due to the reach of the magnetic field limit, or due to a defect that is dissipating power, that is producing heat, and is going above the critical temperature, and the field emission. Field emission means a lot of electron produced just because the surface at high field is not clean enough to sustain. Here we see again. This here is just used to say multipacking. Multipacking is the fact that if you have an electron in such a cavity in which you have this large electromagnetic field, you have a probability, if the surface is not clean enough and the secondary emission coefficient that gives how many electrons are produced for an impinging electron is much higher than one, what happens is that you have a probability, that is a high probability, that you have some region in which you have a resonant condition. If an electron is created, this electron, during the cycle, is accelerated in some way. And you have a probability that the electron is coming back in the same point with a certain energy. And to do this, it takes exactly a cycle. So at any cycle, the number of electrons is increasing. And so at the end, you have a load that is reducing the field in the cavity, because you are creating a resonance load. So again, this has been cured with... this exists also in normal conducting cavity, but in normal conducting cavity you put power and you clean up with a brutal force. In here you cannot clean up with a brutal force. So you must be clean from the beginning. Inclusion and so on. So the real step has been the first big result has been done at Cornell, and this was pushing the rest of all this stuff. And from this result in the middle 80s, you start to have application of superconductivity. So in the large storage ring, Tristan, Hera, LEP, and CBAF. Here is just for history. You will have this transparency, so I don't have to stay on these transparencies. But you see the two largest facilities, LEP, that we have already seen, 30 kilometers, and CBAF, that is a recirculated LINAC with two long LINAC and 350 cavities produced. So here you have just a picture of these two boys that are the big first step in this technology. And you see you had this step having a field as high as 5 megavolt per meter. You know, with the Tesla step, we went to 35. But before this big step of LEP and CBAF, the field was 1, 2, or few, or less than 1, okay, because of all this problem. This, and you see that a major step in this has been taking seriously the technology, using clean room to do all the assembly, using ultra pure water with purified to have no any residual, so that can stay on the surface after cleaning, and so on. And because of the large, that has been the first step. Other thing has been learned, that the fact that, for example, you have to buy the best possible niobium, and you have to push industry to give you a niobium that is not a bad niobium, other way doesn't work. Eventually you have to clean up the surface very much. And you must do the assembly in the clean room. You must use ultra-pure water. So it seems now very stupid, all this. But that was a limit in the beginning. And you have to use a closed-loop chemistry. You cannot just use a simple chemistry, because it's not clean enough. And finally, this is a new level of quality control. So the step has been a new level of quality control. And the achievement has been very good. If you look, for example, in the case of the CBAF, you have many years of operation without any stop, and the only stop was created a couple of years ago by the famous Isabel Hurricane. So, I mean, it's years without. And if you look here, the total time lost in these years for the different component of the machine, so sometime you have a break in the machine operation because of something, you see that the superconductivity is really marginal. So it's much easier that the pump is breaking, that the klystron is breaking, and so on, that the cavity is breaking. The case of LEP is similar, so you have a very nice operation, and in the years of operation of LEP, the average gradient of the cavity was improving. You see, the average at the end was up to 7.5 megavolt per meter. Very good. And at that point was limited by cryogenics, because the plant was done for a certain energy dissipation, not for another one. So, as I said before, that is just written, what I said, so a number of lessons has been learned. So for here, the turn cavity was done by sputtering. This is a good technology for large cavities, for low voltage, cannot be improved to very high gradient. And if you want, if you start to be very clean, 2K operation is better than 4K, that is evident. But as far as your residual resistance was very high, was no sense to go to 2K because it was not clean enough. The residual resistance was too high, and so on. So the quality control has been the key point. So finally, on the basis of this result, it started the Tesla collaboration. They say, well, if we are able to gain a factor of 5 and reach in 25 megavolt per meter. Here you see, you know, the typical limit of when I say 50 is a peak field. Remember that because it's a standing way, the accelerating field is half of the peak field because you are integrating a wave that is moving. So you are integrating cos squared. So the gain is 1/2. You have to see the first lecture on that. So finally, if you do this, you can reach the goal. So what has been finally done in the Tesla collaboration is just, first of all, to set up the most efficient, the most sophisticated facility to treat the cavities. So we learned that was very important to treat the cavities, to be clean. So now the point is, do better with respect to CERN and SIBA. Do the best, okay? Try to put a list of all the steps you want to do in the process and try to follow this with a perfect quality control. What has been very important that people does not consider because is that was also done a scanning of the sheets to see this big defect, developing an eddy current system to scan each sheet before to produce a cavity. That is fun, and now can be, this is a nice history, because what you can see with a system like this, it's really big particle. The sensitivity of this guy was 100 micron. 100 micron is big. So if you have an 100 micron defect, the cavity is really bad. So, I mean, it's not performing more than 10 or 15 megavolt per meter. The goal was much higher. If you have a defect of 50 mega of 50 micrometer, this system cannot see, and your cavity in any case will never reach a 30 megavolt per meter or 25 or so on. So, was poor, but was enough to put industry in hurry. Say, oh, there is a possibility of building a machine of 30 kilometers. There is a possibility of a market of hundreds of tons of very expensive niobium. We have to do something if you want to make this possible. So it's been a reaction of the industry to, in a certain sense, to this machine, more than the effect of this machine, that produced a step in the quality control of the niobium from the industry. So this is a cavity. You have here the parameters, and you see it's a very simple cavity that at the end has been chosen. Very simple, optimized in the sense that to be on average on all the parameters, not too tight. You will see now the new cavity designer a little bit more, but this one is a very nice cavity with this ring to make the structure more rigid, and with these parameters that, you know, here you have these two parameters that I want just to remind you. So when I'm speaking about accelerating field, in this kind of cavity, the accelerating field is half of the peak field you have on the surface. And the accelerating field in megavolt per meter is four times less than the peak magnetic field you have in the surface expressed in millitesla. So what does it mean? Means that if you want to have 20 megavolt per meter accelerating, you have on the surface 40 megavolt per meter. That means that your cleanness for field emission problem is determined by this 40 megavolt per meter. If you want to rise this field, you have to consider that at a certain level, that in this kind of cavity, it's a little bit more than 40, 42, 43 megavolt per meter, you reach the limit of a peak surface field above the critical magnetic field that is the limit of this cavity. So this cavity cannot go much higher than 42, 43, 44 megavolt per meter. You can design a cavity in this width ratio, it's a little bit less. You can have this ratio a little bit higher. So, you know, and after you can gain something. But you cannot break the limit of 180, roughly, millitesla. So this is your physical limit. So the 35 megavolt per meter are a good number. If you want to go higher, you have to change the design in a way to reduce this number. Okay. Now, you see here the apparatus I said. This is the eddy current current. This you see the preparation of the cavity. So, you see the water pressure rinsing in a closed cabinet with all the... It's just a picture gallery. You see here a better picture of what I said if you have field emission. If you have an electron emitted here, it's a problem because you have a good probability that this electron is accelerated. If you have some dust, you produce some electrons, and this can be accelerated in the structure. And at the end, this electron will go to the wall. And as high is the energy of this electron, as high is the power that is dissipated. So you can also have a quench, that's because you have this dark current problem. You see, everything was done in a very clean way. Chemistry, preparation, and so on. A big infrastructure, you see, 120 meter infrastructure was created with a clean room, clean chemistry, module assembly, test of the cavities. All this was just created and the space for ELINAC to do the test. So all this, without the effort concentrated by many labs, was not possible to make the step. Without the dream of a big accelerator, industry would never, for a small production of niobium, would never have done the step in the quality control of the material. So this technology is easy at the end. It's very easy. The point is, if the all steps has been really done because of a big... And here you see something that I've shown already, that once the infrastructure started to work, you have immediately a result much higher than the previous one. And if you see here, it was just a learning curve of enriching 25 in a few years. So first step due to the infrastructure, second step due to understanding of the infrastructure. Nothing of strange physics, no new physics, just a new quality control. The last production gave this kind of result. So very good cavities, it was a goal of Tesla, a little bit less than 25 megavolt per meter. So good result, very high Q, with two problems. One was still field emission in this region, and the other one was it was not understood the fact that we are speaking about 2001 and not 20 years ago, was the fact that at a certain level the field was dropping. So if it was going according to BCS, you could expect something like this. So because the Q, as high as the Q, as less is the power dissipation from the cryo plant, would, even if this was a design goal, surely would be much better to have the point here than to have the point here. So this was not understood. So finally, the two big contributions from outside that make the difference to go to 35, I have to quote this. One is coming from Saclay, and the other one is coming from KK. So the one from Saclay is has been done by chance, in a certain sense. So if you are doing a baking of the cavity and the vacuum at a certain moderate temperature, once it's done, you have a redistribution of the oxide on the surfaces, and so this is producing as effect to cure this Q drop you have at the end. And the other is, well, because we have to be clean, I am explaining very simply, because you have to be clean, if you are doing on the surface electropolishing, the surface is so smooth with respect to the other that the surface will be clean better, and the result will be better, less field emission and less stuff like that. So here you see an example of the cavity before the in situ baking and after the in situ baking. So this one is flopping up. So this is working. Is not perfectly controlled, so sometimes it's not working. So the fact is, parameters have to be set, the quality control of the process. But you see, now this is really a big step, because that means that the high field, you can really go to higher field, and in the same time, you can have higher Q. You are not gaining anything in this region, apart from this effect that is something that is too much complicated to be explained. But and the other is that electropolishing the surface from this level is going to this level, and again, you have higher field, because you can clean better. Finally, it's nothing, the surface is not changing. You can just clean better. I have shown already, so that's through these two new ideas, you start to have 35 megawatt per meter result. What was also convincing the ITRP people was two major tests. One is to take one good cavity above 35 megavolt per meter and to test this cavity for as much as more than 1,000 hours in a complete system with all the ancillaries, power couplers, every tuners, everything, and to demonstrate a long-term test, not just a single case, okay? Here you see the cavity in this small cryostat. And the other was to make the test that I've already shown of one cavity that was performing well and to install this cavity in one big accelerator module together with other cavities and to demonstrate that this was not spoiling the cavity. So this cavity was measured before and was good, has been installed inside a module, you see, together other cavities around here, and has been tested. And the result was good again. So that has been, I'm just showing this just to close, because that has been, in a certain sense, another point that was, I mean, is a proof of existence, is not really a technology. All the quality control to reproduce this in thousands of cavities is not been done yet. It's a big work to do. But the fact that you can cure the Q slope, you can do this kind of experiment means that with effort on quality control can be done. Just to show to remember you, I said that the residual resistance. If you look to this cavity I showed before, it's very nice that in this case you start to see the difference if you are playing from the 2K, that is the normal temperature we are using, and if you are going a little bit down in temperature. So you see that going down, you see the Q is really improving. If it's really improving from the 10 to the 10 to 2, 3, 4, 10 to the 10, means that you are really having a residual resistance that is a reorder of 2-3 nano-ohms. So all the process is more or less under control. Also, this is maybe is too much to be understood, but the field emission from the normal cavities we produce in the with the chemical polishing to the cavity produced with was moved a few mega volt per meter above. This field emission that can produce additional cryo losses, again, it's a problem of quality control of water, and is a problem that it's not completely solved. But these two transparencies has been, this one, has been crucial for the decision, because at a certain point before the last, last meeting, the ITRP were posing the problem, you will be killed by, that was Slack that was suggesting this question, you will be killed by dark current. So we did experiment and I presented this transparency that was enough to demonstrate that the dark current we have in the last cavity was consistent with the design. Well, that is enough to conclude this is a normal finish. You can find these posters starting from the DAISY web page that was presented when the ITRP group were visiting the laboratory. But these are interesting because they're showing how many labs are and how many projects are now, after the Tesla step, are now basing their future on superconducting technology. I am not expecting that you can read this, but it's enough to show that you have almost all the new projects are based on the superconducting arrest. Because now the fact is the proof of existence of high level has been done. Again, the technology does not exist in terms of reproducibility and so on. Must be done, but it's been proven. Finish this up. Questions?
Yeah.
No questions, no.
Maybe you can give us some explanation about the difference between Tesla project and IRC for technology.
The point is that nobody knows about because I go to the other one after if you want the break. I mean it's okay. The problem is that what the ITRP guys said is we are choosing the technology, not the design. And the community said okay. Now, the Tesla design exists. No other design exists. So what is the concept behind is we don't have to start tomorrow. We know that tomorrow or today we have to start to create the enough effort to set the technology to do all this. But we have a couple of years, 1 or 2 years, to re-look at the design of the machine. We will see the major component, because if somebody has better idea, not really on the Linac, marginally, okay, you can say, well, I have a better coupler, so you don't change anything, you just put my coupler that is better, or another say, well, I have a better klystron, so you don't have to change anything, but I put my klystron that is better, is more efficient and costs less. So you have, from the linear point of view, I would say the scheme is done. What you have to do is just to optimize the object, having a much larger community of people thinking about it. From the point of view, we will see in the last lecture, the point of view of the critical beam dynamic issues, which charge it's the best to have the best probability to reach the luminosity It's better to have bunches at a 300 nanosecond or a 200, maybe a little bit smaller, and so on. All this is under discussion. So you don't know which number will be chosen at the end for ILC. You see that the Tesla number are more or less consistent, but surely they are not the best. Surely can be optimized. Is a
critical temperature
yes.
of semiconductor material is important in your design?
Yes. I have shown not to come back. So the critical temperature of niobium is the parameter that is playing with this Boltzmann statistic. So as high is the temperature of superconducting material, the critical temperature, at the same temperature you have more Cooper pairs produced. Because what is important is the ratio between the temperature you're using and the critical temperature. So in principle, this means that if you have a material with a higher critical temperature, the residual resistance is smaller. So you gain. You have two problems. One is that the only material we can handle, we know that we can, is so simple, is a pure metal like niobium. So you start to know how to produce this niobium completely pure and so on. So at the end you don't have alternative. That is one point. And the fact that you don't have alternative is well seen to the fact that if you try another material, you have a very bad residual resistance. Niobium 13, for example, has been tested, but because it's a material that you are producing through a thermal cycle, it's never perfectly stoichiometrically done. So you have a very huge material. The other point in favor of niobium is the fact that the critical magnetic field of niobium is higher in this application. Again, probably because of purity. So at the end, you don't have alternative at present. Maybe you will have. So all the material of the high TC superconductors, for example, would have in principle a good advantage because of high critical temperature. But one property of the high TC superconductor is to be fully non-isotropic. So they behave in a completely different way in the different plane because or how they all the molecules are done. So the point is in a cavity is you have the field that is moving in all the directions. So you can use this in the magnet where you have the current flow that is in one direction. But in a cavity it's very difficult. So all the test has been poor. Yes, you have two alternative way to produce a cavities. One is a spinning that is done in Legnaro, and the other one is hydroforming that is developed at DESY with the Russians. Both are promising, but probably both will be in a certain sense not considered in the mainstream very soon, because they are far away to be competitive with respect to the other. And the cost of the production of the normal cavities, we know how to produce. So the technology is now so far that the cost of the production of the cavity in the world
is now becoming a minor conflict. And all the rest that is not has not been solved in the non in a seamless characters is still so big, so that as has been decided to concentrate in one technology, to try to have all the effort in one technology, I would not be surprised if a snowmass will be decided that this kind of stuff are no more considered strategical for the IOC. Historically, has been very important because at the beginning of Tesla, the critical point was the welding. So we had all the problem in the welding. So before to understand the welding, the limiting point was the welding. So at that point was a boom of the seamless cavities.
Thanks, Professor.
That is a continuation, and after it makes a break.
Do you need a break?
No.
No? Okay. Let's continue.
So that's just a, this is a many transparencies, but very simple, because now I'm just showing the other component of the technology. We have seen the cavity. Now we have all the technology as many other components. It's just a slide show of this. It's never more than this. And after we have the break, and after we will have the last one, a little bit more about the, some physics.
Okay, let's continue. If you want to rest, just go outside for some time. Okay.
So, because it's a new lecture, so I repeat here the where the mission were of Tesla. So we have seen we can reach the high gradient. The mission was 25, we reach a 35. Another point of the mission that for the moment we skipped is the fact that usually the normal conducting, superconducting cavity likes to work in a CW, so with the field standing. The field is but in the case of Tesla, because of the, we have seen of the importance of the, to limit the losses, we have to use a pulse operation. We have to use a duty cycle. We have seen 5 hours, 1 millisecond, for example. So, if you pulse a cavity, I will show this. Nobody realizes this in the normal conducting cavity, but the superconducting cavity in which you have a such a narrow band because of such a high Q, you have an effect of Lorentz force. So, and that we will see. And the other point was to be able to develop all the other objects of the machine and even to try to have a design of the machine. So, this is what has been done. In 2001, a TDR has been written on the basis of the result. Remember, 2001 means that at that time was not still understood the baking, that means to cure the Q drop at the end, and was not still understood, there was not still included the electropolishing. So, in a certain sense, this was guessing 35 megavolt per meter, but the 35 were not still demonstrated. Okay. But was in a certain sense consistent, and in any case a goal of Tesla was 25 megavolt per meter. So, here you see the scheme of the machine. You see that the machine was proposed for Hamburg, and you see a sketch of the tunnel of this machine. Here you see again, just to be sure, that was a machine that was supposed to move from Daisy, and to have the interaction point at 15, 16 kilometers from Daisy, here. You see here also that I will come back in this point, that the region where this machine was supposed to be built is quite noisy from the point of view of the... So now the parameters. Parameters, the total length was supposed to be 33 kilometers, the accelerating gradient 23, not very high. Now ILC is supposed to have 35, maybe will be reduced, but it's like this. And it's interesting to say that it's a 5 Hertz repetition rate, 1 millisecond length for the beam, with as high as about 3,000 pulses, bunches in each pulse, and a separation that is important for physics of 300 nanoseconds in each bunch. That means one collision every 300 nanoseconds. The other important point here is that you have high luminosity and a required power for the LIMAC of 100 megawatts. For a beam power, for each beam, of 11 megawatts. So, good efficiency, but in any case, huge. With the possibility, also in the TDR, it's also the possibility to have an energy reach higher, paying in luminosity, or the energy reach up to 800, increasing, make a lot of investment in increasing the RF power. You know, increasing the RF power means that to increase the luminosity at this field, you have to accept to have more current in the beam, more beam power, so you need more RF. And you need also higher field, and so you need more cryo power. Okay, so if you do this, now this is a scheme. It's not a small machine. Here I prefer to design a nuclear plant, because it's not. I mean, it's in any case it's a huge amount, 140, and let me say it's optimistic. If you do the calculation, this number can just grow, not go down. And if you look how this is done, this is a very high efficiency with respect to the normal conducting. It's more than a factor of two. So for luminosity, you have 20 megawatt beam power, 2 times 11 megawatt. And this is to move from this number to this number, you have the LINAC that is consuming about 100, and most of this is RF, and one part, that is 20%, is cryogenic. So, to produce helium to cool the cavities. This one is to produce the field to accelerate the beam. But you see, this power is what you take from the plug. After, your system has a modulator, and the modulator has a certain efficiency, let's say 78%, that was considered. And this is a big block, it's cost a lot, it's a big fraction of the machine, this one. And if you can rise this value by 5%, this you save megawatt in operation cost. And after you have the Kleister, let's say with an efficiency of 65. Toshiba is thinking that they can do 75. So if you do 75, you have two choices. You can, this, what you gain here can be saved in the term of power cost, or can be gained in term of beam power. That means luminosity. Okay? And after you have this 60% of the cavity. So why is the cavity are 60%? That the cavity in principle are 100%, because what you are consuming in the cavity is just a cryolysis here. All the rest is zero. All the power is going to the beam. But, as I said, if you want high Q, we have chosen 1 millisecond pulse, because it takes about half a millisecond to rise the field. So this half a millisecond, you consume the power, but you are doing nothing. So this 60% is a bet. So you are spending some of the power just to rise the field, mainly. And just because you need a certain margin for all the regulation to have a stable amplitude, a stable phase, and so on. So it's not this 40% is just due to the rising time of the field and to the regulation. And after you have 40 megawatts just for big ancillaries, you need an injector, you need this dumpy ring that is this big object that just required to have a very high beam quality. You need this BDS, this beam delivery system. You have a few kilometers, 3-5 kilometers of optics to let the beam collide together. And you have many other ancillaries. All together are huge. Okay. So this is the balance of this machine. So this is just to start, because remember that the technology, all this has been considered by the ITRP in a certain sense standard, in quotation mark. So it's something that is not out of what can be done. It's not strange. But you have a lot of possibility of improvement of all this component. And most of the cost is here in this kind of component, a big fraction. So if you can produce a modulator more efficient and cheaper, this is a bigger part of the several billion cost of the machine. If you can, all this is quite important. It's not just a cavity. We have seen the cavity. So this was the core, because if this were not working, finished. But once this is working, in principle, after you have all these ancillaries, so go in the ancillaries. So Tesla collaboration had a certain milestone. So it had been set in February. In March was proposed to set up the facility that includes what we have already seen to prepare cavities, but also a LINAC, a sample of the collider, to see the controls, everything, working together. And the first beam was 3 years later, even less, and after has been done some SESE, and 4 years later a design report has been written. Okay. And after you have other steps that we have seen already yesterday, but finally in April we got a 35 megavolt per meter last year, and I can say a few months later the ITRP decided for coal. So we have seen, from the cavity point of view, we have seen already. Everything has been based from the cavity point of view on this facility. But this facility, we have seen the cavity preparation, we have seen the previous lecture, was just here. Clean room, chemistry. Okay. But this facility is much bigger, this infrastructure. You see here where the LINAC has been installed, this LINAC. Here is a region where these modules are assembled. So the cavities are put together in this called the module, where you can maintain these cavities at 2 Kelvin. You have a cryo plant that is coming from here to here, and you have part here. You have here a huge number of pumps just to produce a 2 Kelvin from the normal helium. You have here an area where you can test the cavities, and so on. So this infrastructure was really huge. Many things. It's not just cavities. Now I'm going fast. So to test a cavity, you need this is a cavity during the first test. You have to have this big bottle in the wall where you can put the cavities immersed in the liquid helium. You have seen already here, you need also an horizontal object where you can put the cavity fully assembled with couplers, tuners, everything. And you, apart from chemistry, the electropolishing has been installed. And we have seen already the string assembly. So when you have the cavity, you have to put all the cavities together in the clean room, class 10, when you're doing the connection, to be sure that everything, you don't have any contamination. You see, at the end, it's a very simple stuff. It's just a problem of quality control. I want to repeat many times. it's much more complicated from the point of view, electromagnetic point of view. A traveling wave structure, a Schlachtite structure, what you are doing in your institute is much more complicated. This is a very simple object from the electromagnetic point of view, but must be perfect. Okay? So, look at the Kepler, for example. This animal is at present what we have. It's a good one, it's working. We don't have any failure. It's from the point of view of the performances is good. The heat load is small. This heat load means that the fact that you have a Kepler, you have a connection between the cold part and the warm part, you have to spend some power at low temperature, but not too much. It's consistent. But you have two problems. It's a very high cost. A Kepler costs more than half of what is cost a cavity. That is very high. Very high. And it needs more than 100 hours to be processed. So it's very difficult to imagine that you install the machine and after you are taking weeks to process a Kepler. So, and that is because it's very complicated. But in the case of the Kepler, so the people, they're trying to put in the design all the possible options. And now, after a lot of work, years of work, this Kepler works well, but it's much too much complicated. So that is a big point that is taking a huge amount of the total cost. There is a group in Saclay, in Orsay, where a Kepler development group has been set in collaboration with DESI, with a sharing of the investment between DESI and Orsay, in which they have a clean room assembly, they have a test stand, and they are also trying to look at the alternative design to see if eventually can be done better. Just a parenthesis, at KK, one of the first things I did is just to try to design a simpler coupler. Because I want to say, this coupler is good, but is by far too expensive. Another critical component is that the cavity, because of this small band, must be tuned at the micrometer level to be exactly at the frequency you want. So, you do a very good mechanical stuff, but after you are squeezing or stretching a little bit to be sure to be at the frequency. You must be precise at the Earth, over a gigahertz, so 10 to the 9 precision. So it's a nanometer level of tuning. So you need systems like this one or this one that are moving the cavity. These are both working, so exist. But also here, eventually you can do improvement. The big problem, I said, is a Lorentz force tuning. This is, I spend one transparency to show this because it's interesting. So, it's a really Lorentz force. We have seen that on the surface you have the magnetic field, okay, but the magnetic, you have also the current on the surface, the current that has sustained the electromagnetic field. Now, what you have, that you have a magnetic field and the current, that they are perpendicular, and so what you have, that is, they are producing a force, the usual Lorentz force we have seen already. Well, this force is very little. You never care about that. In a normal conducting cavity, you never care about that. But in the case of superconducting cavity, that has a thin wall of a couple of millimeters, that is like a sphere, a thin sphere of a couple of millimeters, and you have a high field, what happens is that when you pulse the field, for example, 35 megavolt per meter, this teeny force is producing a deformation on the cavity surface that here is amplified, that is important. It's like this, or like this. You know, here you see different deformation because here is a so-called stiffening ring you have seen on the cavity, is a ring that you are welding from cell to cell to try to cure partially this effect. Or depending on the position of the ring, we have chosen this position, you have a more or less deformation. Be careful. You don't want to find the position. It's one ring, you could say, you could do better with two rings. But we don't have the technology to weld the two rings without spoiling the cavity, simply said. So one ring is what we can do. So in the one ring solution, you don't want to have the solution where the deformation is minimized. You have to consider this later theory. So any deformation, any reduction or increase of the volume is producing a variation of the frequency. Okay? So depending on the effect of this variation of the frequency, you are choosing a solution that is the one that is producing the minor effect. But also in this way, what we have is that with the Q we have about 10 to the 10, we have a band of 400 Hertz because of the coupling, because of the beam, and at 30 megavolt per meter, the deformation of this kind produced by the field is as high as 1 kilohertz, so 2.5 times the band. So the resonance in this rising of the field is gone. So it's critical. Okay, so it's not normal in normal conducting cavity. So you know you can play this game because even if it's twice the band, you can start with a slightly different frequency. You put a lot of power, you are consuming twice the power that you need, and more or less you can survive. But that means that the huge amount of RF power that you require will be just a double, 75 megawatt becoming, or whatever it is, it's becoming 150 megawatt, just because you cannot cure this effect. So we did a test. So in the tuner, we put an element here that is a piezoelectric element, or is the same that you are using in a lighter, or is the same that you are using many places, but is also the same that is now used in all the airplanes, for example. To reduce the, has been very important to use, or in the and in the diesel engines, to reduce the vibration. It's an element that if you excite with a voltage, you have a variation in the length, or vice versa. You change the length and you have the voltage as you use in the lighter. So it's fast enough. So the idea is that if you put this in a proper position, you can compensate for this detuning just in the same time, half a millisecond, you are, for example, squeezing or stretching a little bit, a micrometer, few micrometers, the cavity, to compensate for this kilohertz variation that you have by the Lorentz force tuning. That has been done, has been proven. Here is an example in which this system was working. So this is a frequency variation you have if you are not compensating when you are pulsing the cavity. You see, you start, for example, for zero, means zero, exactly the frequency. You pulse, and during this millisecond pulse, the frequency is changing by about a kilohertz. But if at the same time you are pulsing this piezo, so you can do the phase of the stuff in a way that the system is doing in the same time a variation of the frequency that cannot be done by the normal tuner because it's very fast. Okay. So, but this system, has been tested, has been working. was done with resonant compensation. That is too much complicated to be explained, but you know, it's working. Now what we are doing is to include this piezo system in the tuner design we have seen before. And we have two samples. One has been development at CA Saclay with some collaboration, say, and so on, in which you see the tuning system that is stretching the cavity to produce a tuning includes a piezo element here. Or the other one that is done by us, that is using the other tuner, remember the one called plate that is a coaxial one. This one is more suitable for ILC because it's not occupying any longitudinal dimension. This one will be probably chosen by the XFEL because it's less expensive, it is good enough. But is occupying a longitudinal space. So, you know, that is cost, because if you arise a field and after you are spoiling a few centimeters every cavity, at the end the length of the linac is longer than if you are not spoiling a centimeter every cavity. But this is a cost optimization, we will see. But also in this case you are putting piezoelectric element, and both tuner will be tested by the end of the year. But, you know, should be working, because they are just based on what has been done before. So, cavities we have seen, and we have ancillaries. Couplers, problem, tuners, and these are the two measures after. After, you have to put these cavities to produce a technology, and to put these cavities in the cryo model. That is what we did in this test of the TTF. So our cryo model, here you see the sketch, is done in this way. So it has been designed to contain as many cavities possible, and to compact this cavity as much as possible, because you don't want just to have high gradient in the cavity. You want to have as less left or space between cavities, for example. You don't have to lose any space in the lens, because the linac is so long in any case. So any kilometers more of the linac is a lot of money. So the idea in this case was really to try to design a model to compact the cavity as much as possible. So to have a longer model, 12 meters, maybe in Tesla was supposed to go to 60 meters, ILC, we will see, probably will be something in the middle, optimized in altogether. You have the cavities suspended in a big pipe, because you don't want to cut the cryogenics at every module. So, in practice, what you have is that this pipe is long 2 kilometers and a half, and you are feeding the system with liquid helium every 2.5 kilometers. So this is to compact as much as possible the system. If you look at other design, like the spallation source that has been done it's been doing in US, they are breaking the cryogenics every modules, but at that point the filling factor of the machine is much less. Okay, now, so this is what I said. So the mission of the cryo model was to try to maximize the real estate gradient. This means that the real gradient, if you divide the length of the machine, if you divide the total energy divides the total length of the machine, you have the real gradient, and not just what you have in the cavity. To try to have everything, to have a subunit with as many cavities possible, to try to have as less as possible connection in cryogenic, as less as possible vacuum break, so all this to try to have like a model of kilometers. This is what we did. That is a sketch. So finally we went through three generations of this model. It's technology. It's more a picture gallery. I don't want to enter in details because it's too much. But we have to develop a number of stuff, like for example alignment strategies. You see here behind, I think that you can see, you have a big pipe and you have this cavity string below, and you have the couplers here, and we have to develop a special shield, special sliding fixture, and all this. And finally here you see the three generation, you see the cut of the cryo model, in which you see there's a cavity. You look at here, first, second, third generation, you see that all we are working, but you know, this is less and less expensive, smaller in dimension, and more stable, better aligned. So it's what we have to do for ILC for many components. So the cryo model, in a certain sense, is one of the more advanced components because it went through three generations. Other component has to be developed more. But you see here, you see that the cavity is a small part of this big pipe. This one is the big steel pipe that is used to sustain all this cavity stream. And after, you have a number of pipes that are used for different reasons. So I want to explain just a few words on this. So to have this at 2K, you put the cavity in a helium vat at 2K. And the helium is just in a container that is around the cavity. But that's easy. You put the helium and you have the cavity. But the problem is, if you do this and you put just in a vacuum envelope, the dissipation just for heat radiation is huge. Just to give a number, the heat radiation just on the black body given by the Stefan Boltzmann equation, I mean, give you half a kilowatt per square meter, half a kilowatt per square meter from the room temperature to the zero temperature. But because the radiation is given by the difference of the fourth power of the two temperature, 2 Kelvin, 40 Kelvin is the same, because it's a fourth power, a small temperature with respect to 300 K, so these 300 K are given half a kilowatt per square meter. So you cannot have half a kilowatt per square meter spent at 2K just because you have a surface here at 300 K at the temperature. So what you have to do is to put in the middle shields at intermediate temperature to reduce the radiation. And as low is the temperature, as high you pay the watt, just for thermal efficiency, and just because your cycle is not perfect. So you have an efficiency of the cycle and something that is physical, that is the thermal effect. So in practice, each of watt you are consuming at 2K cost you in between 700 and 800 watts at the black power. Any watt you are consuming at 4K is costing you 250 watts. Any watt you are consuming at 50-60K is costing you 20 watts. So, you want to have most of the radiation
at high temperature. So the first shield is at 50, 60 K. So most of the radiation of the 300 K is going to something that is cheap. And you are, and the 2K is looking a 4K shield, a 5K shield. In this way, you reduce the consumption.
Moreover, what you are doing, you are putting around this shield some so-called super insulation, so layers of reflecting, very thin reflecting material, that are breaking the radiation to reduce further the consumption. Here you see the model and the reality. So here you see, this is the last generation, first generation. Here you see the model installed.
And you see here the reality. So you see the cavities here, the big pipe here, and you see the different pipes. Okay.
So the pipes that we have seen in the section here are the pipes that are used to feed the helium and to transfer the vapor once the helium has been evaporated. A lot of experience has been done with DTF, and it's just a curiosity. The ILC or Tesla model are just identical, apart from the color, not just the color, but you know, are just identical to the LAC model. It's just for fun. I mean, if you don't see the other side where you have different connection for RF and so on, they are really the same size, the so-called 38 inches here and here. And it's a curiosity, but it's also easy to be understood. If you want to design a machine of many kilometers, you find a way to save money. Okay. So, in any case, this model, apart from the inner part, you need a large vacuum vessel outside, because everything must be under vacuum. Otherwise, the heat exchange is not just by radiation, but it's also by conduction. So you're lost. So, to have a big pipe, very cheap, in steel, you are looking to the oil pipe that are used to transport oil and gas through Siberia, for example. Okay, so these are cheap. And traditionally, the oil pipes are produced in inches. And the size you find in the catalog are by 2 inches. So you can buy 36, 38, 40, 42. And why both independently chosen 38? Because it's the largest, a little bit below 1 meter. So it's smaller than 1 meter, but it's a larger below 1 meter. It's just a curiosity. So again, some details, and the third generation is this one. I'm taking this one just to show some details. So you see here the cavity with the helium vessel. You have here, you see the two shields with the cooling of the two shields, one shield, the other shield. You have the distribution of the helium. For example, this one is to distribute under pressure the 2K helium. This one to cool the shield at the proper temperature. And this one is the return of the cooling of the shield, and so on. I mean, that is it's technology, but it's you have other technology inside. You have, for example, that to sustain all the system, you must have an object, a very precise, but thermally insulated, because otherwise you lose all internal conductivity. So this, you have to develop this. You have to develop this concept of sliding object to maintain the cavity position when the system is cooled down. In a module of 12 meters, the big pipe in stainless steel that is to sustain everything is shrinking, is becoming shorter by 35 millimeters. So that is the major problem of cryogenics, is the fact that you have such a huge change in temperature that all the sizes are changing. And you have to maintain alignment, you have to have everything not breaking in all these cycles. So you had to go through thermal analysis and so on, that is just for fun. And another point that thing that has to be done is, for example, is to develop from the beginning a system, a wire monitor system that you see here, that is a wire that is stretched along the model. And you put beam position monitors, four strip objects, and when you are cooling down, the wire stay fixed because it's fixed to the two edges of the model, that means at work. But the model can move. And moving, you can detect the movement at the micrometer level of the cold part with respect to the wire. So that has been very important, because if you look here, this is just a screen of the control room during one cool down from 300K to 4K. You are cooling down, you are starting to put helium in the system, and the system is cooling down. And you see here the data coming from the stretch wire that are showing here during the cool down movement. They are placed in different position of the model. They are same movement up to 2 millimeters of the internal part. But at the end, when cold, everything was recovered in the limit of less than half a millimeter, that is what is required by ILC. So during the cool down, the system can move, but what is important, that warm and cold, the system stays tight. And this has been very important to optimize the cooling down, to be as fast as possible without breaking anything. Because it's very difficult not to break something when you are going cold. Because due to this, for example, 35 millimeter shrinkage, if one part is not cooled in the same time or is done by a different material and you don't have possibility of sliding, the thermal forces are impressive. Thermal forces can break everything. Okay. So that is again part of the technology that is attached to the cavity. Here you see again the wire monitor system that is used, and you see the alignment that is in the limit of what is accepted by ILC. I want to say all this technique is very nice, has been proven very efficient, very cheap. But it's good if you accept the tolerances of the order of half a millimeter. If you want tolerances below this millimeter, it doesn't work. So we can accept tolerances probably much lower for the quadrupole, but the next step will be to put the quadrupole in the center of the model. At that point, you can imagine to have movers on the quadrupole. This is just another example that I don't want to enter, but you can use a stretch wire system also to measure, this is for preliminary measurement, the vibration you have inside the model. This vibration has been measured with the pumps on. So we have, for example, here detected that we have vibration, especially in the case of the edges of the model, as high as few hundred nanometers. You say, oh, who cares, few hundred nanometers? But where you have the quadrupole, few hundred nanometers are much too much for the collider. So we have to do something. For example, to have a better insulation and the vibration given by the vacuum pump with respect to the model, may be to change or to optimize the suspension of the element to catch this vibration and so on. So we are now moving to what is a little bit more critical. Here you see the assembly of the model, nothing more than this. A long experience, and this has been already done. This is just to show, I would say, more a picture gallery, just to show result on one of the best last model. So you see that all the cavity has been tested at 25 megavolt per meter. Some cavity can run higher. This was just a test. In these days, they are doing a test to move this line up. I heard that most of the cavity can stay but one. This one has a quench for some reason that is not understood around 25. Probably during the assembly or during the cavity has still a problem of contamination or defect. But the other seven cavity, as in the test outside of the model, they are moving to reach the 30. But it's an example, you know. This we have already seen. I don't know why I put. The other point is the other units. I'm going just a peek. We have seen already this one. I've seen that the three major manufacturers of Klystron want to produce Klystron. The modulator is, I want to stress here, would be very important to work on the modulator. In US there are two or three groups of working on modulators. Everybody wants to work in modulator because a big fraction of the cost of the machine is on these modulators. So to develop more efficient, and a lot of the efficiency of the machine, you say these modulators are just producing the pulse for the klystron, and they are consuming 22% of the power to doing this. So if you gain in efficiency, and if you are doing cheaper modulator, it's a big gain. Distribution system, from the klystron to the cavity, to the coupler, you have to distribute with waveguide. You see this one, for example, has been done here, has been developed here. But the other has been developed in Russia. Other has been was not developed in one of the connected lab. So you had to pay this a lot of money to spinner, and you know, to do something like this, you need technology, but can be done. And in a machine like this, you need 20,000-30,000 of these objects. So here there is a lot of space of optimization. And really, also the scheme of the distribution to minimize length, so on. So we are looking at what has been optimized at the level of the TDR 4 years ago, but. You know, a lot of work. You need loads. Can be done. Here you see a model, no? A model with a distribution system. So here you have the waveguide going in this way, round and so on. You can do any different way. Another critical point is the low-level RF. So you want to have a stable wave, stable amplitude, stable phase. So you have a lot of electronics to do this. It's very nice, it's working well, again, also here, the system is not still reliable enough. So you have a proof of existence, you have the possibility that you can, using so-called feed-forward and feedback, you can play the game, but it's a long game. Here is just how the system is working. You see that it's working. You have a slightly different voltages in the cavity, but the sum seen by the beam is always constant. And you see here a cavity while quenching at the limit. This is a bad cavity, was quenching. That the system is trying to compensate this quenching to maintain at a certain point cannot compensate anymore. You have three facilities that are now you have the facility at DESI, and because of the decision of CODE, both Fermilab and KK, as I said yesterday, Rolf Hoyer, want to set up a facility like TTF, including preparation of cavity, including everything. This is a facility of KK. You see, they want to refurnish a number of labs, a number of buildings, to have at the end a space where they can test this model. Now they are working on this, and by middle end of next year they should be able to test this part. But they want, you see, to install the facilities for cavity preparation and everything. The same at Fermilab. Fermilab, they have Fermilab, they are interested not just in a linear collider but also in the proton driver, the two projects are going together, and they wanted to, they are very fast, they are refurnishing a very large area to do this. That's all. I mean, the LINAC is one of the major points from the point of view of the cost, and it's quite important to do better. I want just to finish in this way. You know that somebody is now, Japanese especially, are trying to optimize, to change a little bit the geometry of the cavity to improve the voltage. Remember, probably you don't remember or too many things, but if you want to increase the voltage now, the only way to have to stabilize the technology and so on is to reduce the ratio between magnetic field and accelerating field, because the magnetic field is your limit. Okay. So if you move from the Tesla design to this one, you have less peak magnetic field. It's very easy to be understood. Everybody can do this. The point is, if you look at this volume, is bigger than this volume. And this volume is mainly the magnetic volume of the field. Here is where you have the concentration of the magnetic field, while here you have the concentration of the electric field. So if you look to an LC circuit, here is the inductance, here is the capacitor. So if you want if you have a more space for the same magnetic, for the same integral of the magnetic field, for the same inductance you want to create, for the same frequency, you are distributing the magnetic field in a larger volume. So the peak field is lower. Okay. So you have more volume to distribute. So the peak level, if you do the calculation, is lower. You gain some 5-10%. So in principle, you can gain a little bit. I don't care. You know, if this cavity will work as good as this one, at the end you change the cavity. It's exactly the same. They will fit in the same position, in the same helium tank, everything. So, I mean, it's not a problem. What is interesting here is that the cost optimization doesn't really ask to push for higher field. This cost optimization, you see, is that if you go from 35 to 30, you lose 2% of the total machine cost. It's ridiculous. If you go to 40, you gain nothing. If you go higher, you lose. And the reason is that the cost total is including the cryo power, the cost of the cryo plant, the cost of the RF, and the psi is the, if you go to higher gradient, for example, you take more time to fill the cavity. So the fraction, the efficiency of the RF is going down. So you gain in the lens, so you gain in civil engineering, you gain in the number of cavities, but you lose in the RF. The cryo losses are going quadratically, independently on the lens. So you are losing. So at the end, you don't have really the decision will be taken around these two points for many other reasons. And in any case, probably I would choose this one or some of them, because in any case, a safety margin, if cost nothing, it's better to have a safety margin. Another point is that this does not take into account the cost in terms that usually, if you buy, it's not the cost, it's not directly, it's not independent, it's not per unit, it's not independent on the on the field you want, or on the performance you want. This is considering the cost per object as a cost. So usually, it's not the same if you buy a Ferrari or a normal car. It's different. So probably, if you are asking for higher gradients, you have to pay more. But in any case, that is to demonstrate that this is a nice work, but it's not crucial. That is always the normal stuff. And let's finish.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks, Professor. Okay, next.